The following program is sponsored by Learn to Succeed, LLC. It's not right-wing radio.
Right-wing radio.
It's not left-wing radio.
It's not left-wing radio.
It's Think Wing Radio.
Wing radio. Wing radio.
Welcome to Think Wing Radio. And now your host, Mike Honig.
Good afternoon. I hope you all had a good lunch. Welcome to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on Talk 650, powered by CBS. You can visit our website at thinkwingradio.com, where there are articles, still voter registration information. Just because the last election has passed doesn't mean you don't have to get ready for the next one. Also, past commentaries, article excerpts, and links and more. You can also email me your comments or show ideas or opinions to thinkwingradio@msn.com, and that's all one word, thinkwingradio. Today we're having an open forum, and the number to call is 713-9650-650. I'll be giving away a free dinner for two valued at $25 at the Casa Olé, 34th Street and 290, to the first caller to talk to me on the air. My guest today is Manolo Garibay, a longtime friend. We'll be chatting about whatever strikes our fancy, but first a comment. You've been hearing a lot lately about the end of the Bush tax cuts. You've also been hearing a lot of different opinions on what we should do about it. Extend it for everyone? Let it expire for everyone? Extend it for the middle class but not for the rich? And then we get into what is the middle class? What qualifies as rich? Where are the cutoffs? Who decides? Why should the rich pay a higher percentage of their income in taxes than the middle class or the poor? And once we've thrashed that around for a while, we get to ask, do tax cuts stimulate the economy? How much? Who should get them? Is it better for the economy to give big cuts or small ones? Are there better ways to do it? Does cutting taxes for the rich really provide an incentive for them to create jobs? And on, blah, 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 blah. At the end of the day, this boils down to only one question that matters. What taxing and spending policies most benefit America and the greatest number of Americans? As you listen to this, it's going to sound like I want to beat up the rich with taxes, but there's a punchline at the end that literally changes the equation. Let's start with some basics. And by the way, I'm going to be posting this commentary on my website. And when I do that, there will be links to my sources for this, so you can dig into it yourself if you like. According to the U.S. Census, 2009 median income by state ranged from about $69,300 in Maryland to about $36,700 in Mississippi. Average for the U.S. median was $49,777. What qualifies as median varies quite a lot depending on where you live in the U.S. So based on the national census figures, let's call middle income somewhere between $40,000 and $70,000 a year. In a recently updated study in the United States, as of 2007, the top 1% of households owned 34.6% of all private wealth. 1% over a third of all the private wealth in the country. In terms of financial wealth, the top 1%, and that includes savings and things, had an even greater share, 42.7%. So just 20% of the people altogether owned about 85% of all the nation's wealth. These are a lot of numbers to digest on the radio, so I'm going to repeat that part. 20% of the people own 85% of the wealth. This left only 15% of the wealth for the bottom 80% of American workers. That same 80% only owns 7% of total financial wealth. So let me display it this way. If you had a pizza that was divided up like this in front of five people, four of them would have to share about half a slice. That's how wealth is divided up in this country. Those reporting adjusted gross income, and that's important, adjusted gross income of more than $250,000 make up 2% of the households in 2010. Adjusted gross is usually a lot less than actual earnings. It is estimated that that 2% will earn about a quarter of all income and pay a little less than half of all personal federal taxes. Letting the current rates expire for those folks costs them nothing unless their adjusted gross exceeds $250,000, and then the increase is only on what exceeds that $250,000. But you know what? Well, that's all interesting. It's a little besides the point. Here's the point. Rich people actually make more money when they pay a higher share of the tax burden. That seems counterintuitive at first, but it makes sense when you think about it. In a Slate.com article, Timothy Noah pulls together a lot of different sources of information into a very readable 40-page article that examines a lot of disparate data and reaches some very interesting conclusions. There's a particular chart based on work done by Larry M. Bartles at Princeton, and that chart is going to be on the website. This data shows that under Democratic presidents, everyone makes more, even the top 5% of earners whose marginal tax rates went up. Reading the article, I don't think that there's a suggestion in there as to why that is, but I will take a shot at it. There are lots of interesting and informative charts, but there's one that's particularly interesting. Under Republicans, tax rates tend to be less progressive. That's to say, the rich pay a lower fraction of income as taxes that's made up by higher taxes on people much further down the wealth chain. Higher percentage, that is. The result is that rich people have more money to slosh around, theoretically investing in new business and new jobs. But in reality, mostly it's put into financial instruments, collectibles like art, and perhaps investments overseas. Why? Because in spite of the supply-side common wisdom, people in the lower 80% of earners just don't have enough spending power for discretionary purchases. They hunker down. And that's why supply-side economics is a fundamentally flawed theory. Rich people don't invest money until there's demand for whatever product or service they want to provide. The 8% cash-strapped Americans can't create much new demand, so the rich bide their time and do other things with their money. The rich stay rich, but they don't tend to get much richer because they have no customers. Most of them still save their money and invest it in economically non-productive assets like land, art, etc., perhaps even sending surplus assets overseas for international investments. Under Democrats, everybody makes more money after taxes. The lower 80% of earners get a few dollars more in their checks every week, and they tend to spend it. The rich pay a few more dollars in taxes from their income and are annoyed, but not much hurt. But here's the magic. Because rich people take more of the tax bullet for the average Joe, Joe has more money to spend. Joe buys gifts for the wife and kids. Maybe Joe can now qualify for a mortgage on a new small house or a modest car loan. Joe's not feeling rich, but he feels like he's got a little room to breathe, and so much stuff is wearing out, or the kids need new clothes and stuff. Joe is grateful to have the money to buy those things, which will make his family's life a little better. It's called pent-up demand, and Joe's got plenty of that. So Joe and his neighbor and his trash collector and his sales clerk all have a few more bucks every week, and they all have pent-up demand. Rich people notice this. Their money has been pretty much parked in financial instruments with low but safe yields. Their stocks have been languishing, though, because the companies they own haven't had any customers until after the middle-class tax cut. Suddenly, things are picking up. Store stocks are running a bit low. They place bigger orders, putting more folks back to work, and they have their own pent-up demand, and now the cycle has been flipped and is once again heading uphill. What we see here is the fundamental failure of the supply-side model of economics. No entrepreneur will invest in a business until he sees potential demand. Customers with extra money in their pockets are that demand. This might be called the rising tide lifts all boats side of economics. Under democratic leadership, taxation becomes more progressive, which is a nicer way of saying that the rich bite the bullet and take a larger share of the tax burden in the interests of the greater good. On its face, on an abstract philosophical level, that seems unfair, but is it unfair if the rich end up also making more money at higher tax rates? Let me try to summarize this for you, but remember, I'm going to be posting all of this online with links and notes. That way, if you want to dig deeper and reach your own conclusions, you can. But in the chart I have in front of me, over a span from 1945 to 2005, 57 years, every income group did better under Democratic presidents, including the rich. The top 5% of earners made an extra 0.2%, the top 21%, the top 40 made an extra 1.4%, even the bottom 20 made a whopping 2.2%. And the reason the rich did better by sharing more of the tax burden, because their investments were worth more. Their businesses did better, so their profits and stock prices went up. With increased business activity, their savings and financial instruments became worth more, and their interest yields grew. In this sense, taxes on the rich, whatever your views about the justice of a progressive tax system, turns out to be a good investment for the country and the rich. In 1953, GM President Charles Wilson testifying before Congress. When asked a question about potential conflicts of interest, Wilson's actual but frequently misquoted response was, quote, "For years, I thought what was good for the country was good for General Motors and vice versa." That's how we all have to see it, especially those with wealth who are understandably concerned about taxes. What's good for America is good for the rich and vice versa. That's how I feel. We have to take a break. We'll be right back. And we're back. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig. I went a little long on my commentary, so I had to rush out. But now we're back, and today on the show, I have a good friend of mine, Manolo Garibay. How you doing, Manolo?
I'm doing just great. I feel so honored and elevated to be a guest.
Oh, as do I.
No, I appreciate it, and I really enjoyed your commentary. But, you know, just a real quick bit that's on the top of my head is post-midterm election, and Governor Perry's constant campaign claimed that he had balanced the state budget, and it was just announced today that there was a $20 million shortfall. Question here is, Governor Perry, where is the balanced budget?
That's always a good question, but at least he's got the hair.
Yes, he does. Yeah. Helmet hair.
Helmet hair. I've called him the Texas Blagojevich.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good one, too.
I got an email from Charles this morning, and this kind of goes back to this whole tax and budget thing, and I'll read it because it's relatively short. The Presidential Deficit Commission has released a list of recommendations which include various changes in retirement age benefits and other savings to make Social Security trust funds solvent. Many contend the fund is broke. All the money has been taken and replaced with worthless IOUs, is the claim. He, in fact, Charles did heard Sean Hannity make that exact comment on the radio yesterday. It's not true, and millions of people are misinformed. They need to know the truth. The fact is, according to Charles, the money was replaced with certificates of obligation issued by the U.S. Treasury, backed by the full faith and credit of the U.S. government, just like Treasury bonds. And if it ever gets to the point they're no good, then our money is no good either, because it all comes from the same place. Everyone is entitled to their own opinions, but not to their own facts. Actually, there are a couple of interesting points there. Social Security collects money that it's eventually going to pay out. And while it is kind of a transfer system from young to old, it's not transferred dollar for dollar, day for day. In fact, there is a buildup of equity that is used to balance out the system as the years come and go. What's kind of interesting about this is that in previous administrations, that money has, in fact, been loaned to the United States government, but it's also affected the way they have reported the deficit. In other words, they're counting that money as if it's general revenue money, so it reduces the deficit because you've got all this Social Security money. And that in itself is a problem because it conceals the actual debt.
It gets involved, doesn't it?
Yes, it really does. What are your thoughts on this whole tax thing about whether the tax cuts should be extended for everyone or nobody or just the middle class? And, you know, where does middle class begin? What do you think about that?
My opinion is that President Obama has to stand some ground. He has to follow through with what he talked about during the campaign and, you know, many times since then. And that's this. If the Republicans will not help him continue a tax increase on the top 2% and keep the tax cut for the 80%, you know, 98% of the American workers, then he should just let them expire.
By the way, I just want to mention the show is open forum today. The phone number is 713-9-650-650. You know, one of the interesting things to consider, and this isn't really mentioned much, but that $250,000 cap before you get into the extra fee, the extra tax, that is adjusted gross, adjusted gross. Now, what that means is for a lot of people in that tax bracket, they're probably actually grossing about $400,000 a year, maybe $500,000 a year. And that $250,000 adjusted gross, that's after they've taken off their home mortgage interest and maybe medical bills and maybe educational expenses. It's all this other stuff. So we're really talking about people making a lot more than $250,000 a year. That's just the taxable number at the end of the 1040.
Yes, that's absolutely correct, and it is very, very fair, and certainly doesn't seem so obtrusive as a lot of people have been led to believe, and as a result believe that it's going to tax so many more people and so on. But the thing that just gets under my skin, Mitch McConnell and John Boehner and all the rest of the crowd, continue saying you don't want to tax anybody. Increase taxes on anybody in a recession. Well, the idea is that these millionaires and billionaires that they're not going to change their buying habits. They're not going to do anything about changing the way that the economy is. They're not going to go out and buy another car or buy another house.
Well, unless they feel like it because they're rich.
Yeah, but they're not going to change their buying habits, just like in your commentary. They're going to invest their money. And at the very basis of this is that this is a personal income, earned income. This is not a business profit, a corporation profit.
Yeah, all of that stuff gets under different categories, capital gains, whatnot.
Sure, sure. And speaking of that, I think that the taxes ought to be increased for corporations, for small businesses, above a certain rate, as well as capital gains, because there's so many small and large corporations that have reported millions and billions of dollars of profit and pay no tax whatsoever. That's not fair.
Yeah, there are some companies that actually pay less tax than you and I do.
Yes, absolutely.
When you think of business, when you think of this whole trickle-down thing, the Republican theory of trickle-down economics, that's really kind of a push theory. You push money into the hands of the rich, they'll push money into business investments that create jobs, and then magically there will be demand. And I don't know that it's ever worked that way. I don't know how Republicans can even claim that it ever works that way. Rich people invest money when there is demand for something, and then they go, oh, we can make some money by satisfying this demand. It's not unheard of, but it's unusual for someone to say, I can make money by creating this demand. That's a little unusual, although it does happen.
Well, it's very, very true. And the same argument can be used when the Bush tax cuts came into effect. It was to enable the top 2% to create jobs. McConnell and Boehner keep talking about them, the job creators. Well, for the last administration, there was only like 1 million jobs that were created, as opposed to the prior administration when Bill Clinton was in the White House. There was 8 million jobs that were created when there was higher taxes.
Yeah, what I think is interesting is that the Republicans keep making this claim about tax cuts on the rich equaling jobs, but they never really present any figures. They just keep saying it and saying it and saying it, as if saying it often enough will make it so.
And the problem with that is that they continue repeating the same idea over and over again by different talking heads, that people, all of a sudden, the American people believe it. And I can't understand. It's like they're headed in a cloud. I can't believe that people will fall for this.
It's kind of like subliminal advertising where, they used to talk about in the movie theaters, they would flash an idea of a soda into your eyes. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig here on Talk 650 and 650Houston.com. It is open forum today. The phone number is 713-9-650-650. And the first caller on the air with Manolo and I will get a free dinner up to $25 value to the Casa Olay on 34th and 290. We'll be right back. And we're back. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Honig on Talk 650 and 650Houston.com. The call-in number is 713-9-650-650, and we are open forum today, so you can talk about whatever's on your mind. We have a caller, Elizabeth. And Elizabeth, how are you? Hello, Elizabeth?
Hello?
Hey, how are you?
Very fine, thank you.
Thank you for calling. Remember when we're done to hang on so they can take your information for that Casa Olay dinner card.
Okay, absolutely.
So what's on your mind today?
I just wanted to ask a question about one of the comments that you both made about how there are big multi-million dollar, multi-billion dollar corporations that profit from different types of consumer capitalism, and that they're somehow exempt from paying taxes, that they don't pay any taxes. And I just wanted to know, could you cite some examples of some of these companies and also explain how maybe that would be? How would they be able to get out of all the tax
that
the rest of us pay?
It's a fair question. I cannot cite specific examples off the top of my head, but the way they do it is basically they take depreciation on equipment. They take losses perhaps on some divisions. They might have deferred losses from other years that they can take, charitable donations. I think that probably the thing that most gets them off taxes is things like depreciation and losses from other divisions. And they can actually end up paying very little tax in relation to their actual net income. That's my best understanding, as best I can explain it. Is that helpful, or do you care to dispute that?
Well, it's, you know, sort of, sure. I mean, just some examples would be good. That it really doesn't answer the question, because even from a tax perspective, if you show that you're not making very much money because the equipment and items that you purchase and the charitable donations that you make continue to show a loss after a certain number of years, then the IRS is going to audit you to ask, why would you continue to run a business that doesn't make any money? At least for the regular person, that would be the case.
Now, well,
millions of dollars money-making companies, and I'm not saying there aren't any. I'm just wondering who those are and how can they continue to be in business for so long after not posting any profits, and if they're making hundreds of millions of dollars or billions of dollars.
You know, first of all, I'm sorry. First of all, what I'll say is it's a fair question. I will do some research over the weekend. I'll try to post some of that on my website.
Awesome. That would be great.
Okay. Now, as for the other thing, are you familiar with how depreciation works?
I am.
Okay. So if they invest $10 million in equipment, they get to write that off at usually about 5 years, so say about $2 million a year. So they have the equipment. They're using the equipment to make money. They get to write it off, and it comes against their income. So, I mean, it all gets very, very complicated.
Tax law is very complicated.
It is very, yeah, it is very complicated.
But if you depreciate, and let's say if it's a capital gain that you would have normally, you know, assumed if you sold whatever it is, your widget product, but you also, even in depreciating items, they eventually have a zero value. So your capital assets can only be written off for so long. Same thing with the charitable donation. You can give lots and lots of money, but there is a cap on the amount of depreciation and charitable donation that a corporation can make.
But actually, you made a very good point about different kinds of income being treated different ways. You've got capital gains. I think if you hold something, it used to be a year, it might be 6 months, but if you hold something long enough, you pay a very, very low rate of tax on that, and that can be offset by things like depreciation, which normally that income that they're writing off would be taxed at a higher rate.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm sorry, you hadn't, but I will do some work on that, and I will try to post it on the site, because that's a fair question. You had also another part to that question, if I recall.
How do they get out of it?
Oh.
Let's for purpose of this, let's say, okay, that's true. There's these big conglomerates. They get lots. How, you know, does tax creative work? How does one do that? I'd love to know.
Well, I guess that's where the term loophole comes from. I mean, do you itemize your taxes?
I do not.
Ah.
I do standard deduction.
Have you ever been able to itemize your taxes?
Will this year.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah.
That starts to open your eyes to the difference between gross income and taxable income. I apologize. I've got a couple more callers on the line.
Well,
but
good luck with your show.
Well,
good job.
Thank you so much. Visit my website. You can either drop me an email with questions or you can make a comment on the site. And if you don't see something on that information in the next several days, drop me an email and remind me. I'm not beyond just getting sort of distracted.
Sure. Well,
I appreciate it.
Good afternoon.
Thank you so much. You too.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Okay. Manolo, we have another caller.
Great.
Scott from Baytown. Again, asks the excellent question, who defines who is rich? How you doing, Scott?
Doing fine. I listened to your diatribe at the beginning there. And I sound just like a couple of liberals, that who defines who's rich, who determines who keeps whose money. It always kills me that, oh, you say, well, the rich shouldn't keep their money.
No, well, I didn't say that. No, wait a second.
Money?
I didn't say that.
Who determines what rate someone gives let them keep their own money?
Got a new answer.
I hear the president comes out and says, well, the 2% don't need their money.
He didn't say that either. No. You see, you're exaggerating both what I said and what the president said. Hold on. No one said they didn't need their money. No one said they're not entitled to that money. That's an exaggeration, Scott.
Well, what you're saying is you know better than they do.
No, I didn't say that either.
With their money.
No, I didn't say that either.
When someone goes and says arbitrarily at $250,000, everyone else is rich.
What do you consider rich, Scott?
I consider if you're going to set the policy that everyone pays flat tax 10-20%. And then what you make.
Well, first of all, hold on, because you're talking a lot, so I feel free to interrupt here. First of all, if you were to pay a flat tax, it wouldn't be no 10 or 20%. It would be more like 30%. So that's
okay.
Something we need to get.
Hold on.
I'm entitled to talk here, Scott. The second thing is, it's based on the premise that if you make $20,000 a year and you lose 30% of your income to taxes, that's going to hurt you a heck of a lot more than someone making $300,000 a year who loses 30% to taxes. And somebody has to pay taxes, Scott.
When you do your scale there, you take away the incentive to be successful. You want everyone to be on the same plane, the same playing field. Life is not fair. Life has never been fair.
What do you consider
you
rich, Scott? I've asked you a question. You haven't answered me. What do you consider rich?
What I consider rich is do as good as
no,
you
no,
can.
No, no, no. Give me a number. What do you consider rich?
I don't put a number in it because I don't feel like you should limit anyone's ability.
Okay. Is $1 million rich?
Not in my opinion.
Is $5 million rich?
Look, who is it for you or me to determine who's rich?
Hey, Scott, you know, this is an opinion show. I'm asking an opinion. You don't want to give one.
As far as I'm concerned, it should be the government sets the environment by saying, okay, if it's 40% for taxes, and then get out of everyone's way and let everyone achieve. I don't care.
Oh, and you know, BP, I'm so glad the government was out of their way. I apologize, Scott, but I do have another call. And I do need to take them, but I appreciate your call and I appreciate your comments. And if you want to leave some comments on the website, that would be great. I have Greg. He wants to talk about trickle down. How you doing, Greg?
Hi, how you doing?
Fine, thank you.
It's kind of funny. I'm listening to Scott, and I'm relatively new to Texas, and whenever it comes to paying taxes, it just amazes me how no one wants to pay taxes, but when something tragic happens, when you need a police officer, a fireman, or, you know.
Oh, yeah, fire. Remember Gene Kranich.
Yeah, you know, then people will complain when things aren't done efficiently. So it's just so ironic. But, my comment was more along the lines on this trickle-down economic theory. And I know a lot of conservatives really tout this, you know, belief. But one thing I wanted to find out, has anyone ever received any kind of information, any kind of economic model to try to validate some of their claims? If you are able to reduce taxes by X amount, this is exactly how much that the government should receive. Because the way I look at it, at least if if a government knows how much they're taxing their people, then they're able to set policy and be able to adjust the budgets accordingly, because you know you can calculate how much of a certain percent is coming in on an annual basis. But it seems with the trickle-down economic theory, it's based on hope. You know, if we give...
It seems to be based on philosophical faith.
Exactly. If we give them, we hope that they will do X, Y, and Z and be able to spend so much to help stimulate the economy. But it's not based on any kind of validated facts or anything. It's just based on hope, wish, and praying, it appears. So I was just interested if anyone had any kind of economic data that validates when you you know, provide the trickle-down economic theory, this is exactly what would happen. And you know, just thinking logically, if lower taxes help stimulate the economy, then why don't we just lower the tax down to
0%?
Everybody in the world, nobody pays any taxes, then that should blow our, you know, economy right through the ceiling.
Well, I'll tell you what I have read and what I have heard. And then I'm going to ask you, will you be able to hold on through the break so we can finish our conversation?
Sure.
What I have heard is that tax cuts do have some stimulative effect, but it tends to be the worst way to stimulate the economy. I'm listening to the music, and we're just about done. But we will be right back. We are open forum, 713-9650-650. Manolo is still on the line with me. Greg is going to hold so we can finish that discussion, which I appreciate. And we'll be right back. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on Talk 650, and the website is thinkwingradio.com. And we're back. You're listening to Think Wing Radio with Mike Koenig on Talk 650 and 650Houston.com, open forum, and the phone number is 713-9650-650. Greg has been kind enough to hold on through the break. I do just want to make...
Mike, before you go to Greg, can I just add something?
Yes, just let me say one thing. Elizabeth, sure. You didn't leave your information with my producer for the card. Please call us back. My producer will speak to you, and he'll take the information so that we can arrange for you to come and pick it up. Okay. Yes, Manolo. Go ahead.
Yeah. With a bachelor's degree in economics, I certainly can't speak to trickle-down economics with any intelligence, but historically it just doesn't seem to work simply because the people that earn the most money do not spend it. You know, they'll hold on to it for fear of a recession or fear of something going on. So they hold on to it, and as a result, it doesn't get put back into the economy. As far as Scott's question is concerned, the government it runs like a business. It has expenses and it has income, and it has to match the budget with what their expenses are. So whenever it is that the government indicates they're going to need, you know, billions of dollars, they break it down, and as a result, whenever they figure the income, then they have to break it down so from an earned income level, and so that's how they're going to figure it. So this is a very amateurish way of explaining it, but in basic terms, that's what we're talking about.
I would also make this point to Scott that I wish I'd thought of when he was on the phone. But if 80% of the people make 15%, if 80% of the people make 15% of the income, and you're taxing 30% of their income and 30% of the rich people's income, you're getting 30% of 80% of the income and 30% of 15% of the income. And that just doesn't give you enough money. If there's an earthquake or a hurricane, a Katrina, an Ike, a war, you know, all of these things cost money. And, you know, the rich people are being protected by this country, defended by this country, treated well by this country by most standards. But to get back to Greg's question, because I think that's fair, trickle down, not being an expert in this area, but knowing enough to be dangerous and trying to read multiple sources so I have information I feel I can rely on. I have never seen any significant data that seems to actually prove empirically that trickle-down works. In the 1980s, under the Reagan administration, they had what I have to say was a funny name. They had something called the Laffer Curve, L-A-F-F-E-R, and that was actually the name of the economist who came up with it. And he used to present charts that showed that at a certain point, you drop taxes, economic activity increases, there is a point where the lines cross, and then you're taking in more money as revenue, even though you're taxing at a lower rate. Now, I have never seen anything to validate that assumption, whereas there are other numbers that are numbers that say that while tax cuts do stimulate the economy, they are the least stimulative thing you can do. The most stimulative thing you can do is unemployment insurance, because that gets spent virtually 100%. The next biggest thing you can do is public works products, infrastructure, because that gets spent. It creates jobs. The jobs then pay people who spend their money. Plus, and this is really the theory. The theory is you're not supposed to borrow money during good times. You're supposed to run surpluses so you can borrow money in bad times. Unfortunately, we've been borrowing money in good times and borrowing even more money in bad times. And I know that that's kind of a scattershot way of answering your question. I mean, have I given you anything you feel you can hang on to, Greg?
Yeah, as you mentioned before, it's pretty interesting because what it seems is we're going through right now is we have a demand side problem, but we're giving supply side solutions.
Exactly.
And for really to improve demand, you have to really direct go after the unemployment. However, you know, that seems to be a problem right now. And if corporations are not currently employing people, this is where I believe the government really has to step in and provide, as you said, the public works type of positions.
Which in the long run is a profitable enterprise for the country.
Right, right. And it gets more liquidity into the market, and people can start spending, and you can really stimulate the economy a little bit more.
And, you know, also the point that I made during the talk is that even at higher tax rates, and it's only on that rate over that certain number, they end up making rich people, however you want to define that, end up making more money because they have customers for their investments.
Right.
So
right.
It ends up kind of working for them and everybody else. So what's good for the rich is good for America and vice versa.
I've seen more economic data validating that whenever there's a Democratic administration, there's always been positive GDP growth. And no matter who's in control of Congress and the Senate, Democratic administration has always, I mean, it was no comparison between Democrat and GOP. Democrat way, I believe, over like 10% over 50 years.
Greg, I would like to reinforce that very point. You know, it seems like to me that the United States has become the United States of amnesia. you know, what's happened is that we don't realize what has happened in the past. I mean, the Republicans indicate that they're going to reduce the debt and they're going to keep the taxes low and so on and so forth. But the thing about it is that you don't have to look too far in this last administration that took a $630 billion surplus from the Clinton administration and turned it into a $1.3 deficit. And they do
trillion,
this continuously.
That's a great phrase. I'm going to try to remember that. And I also want to point out that, you know, the commentary I gave, I realize it sounded a little like a diatribe and, you know, it was very sketchy. But I actually did quite a bit of research on this, and I will post links and I will post charts. And you folks can start there and look up your own data, because I actually read quite a bit before I say some of these things. So, Greg, I really appreciate your calling. Do you have anything else you want to talk about in, like, 1 minute?
No, I think you're doing an excellent job, and I'm very glad that you brought this topic up, because it just really seems confusing to some people, and I think a lot of us never have taken a class in economics. And if you're confused on the economy,
I'm sorry, I got to cut you off.
Okay.
I thank you so much for calling. ThinkWingRadio.com. And thank you, Manolo. It's been great. I really appreciate your calling and everybody else who is on the phone. And remember, slower traffic, keep right. It's not just a good idea. It's the law.